Welcome to the South Cars Conference number 96140. Connection established.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Yeah, good evening, Mike. How you doing? 3MEW here. Beautiful day. Got a bit of work done. Just sitting back, relaxing, and going to listen to you.
I appreciate that coming from Bill. So, Bill, is it snowing up there in Canada yet, or is the warm weather with you as well?
Very, very funny, Mike. Very funny. I'm laughing. Oh, my. Yeah, I guess I better get my toque out, my gloves, and my scarf, and my snow boots. I'm sure my snowblower is still working. Very funny, Mike.
This is the South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This TNT open forum is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules obtained from FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. The SCARS server is supplied by the West Michigan privately owned repeater network. This TNT net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur related subjects and or areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask any questions of the or that you may have of the speaker. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your moderator for the session is KD0CDQ, Mike, here in Olathe, Kansas, about 23 miles southwest of Kansas City, Missouri. And with temperature being, I would say it's been in the 80s today. We've had some thunderstorms coming through. Before starting, may I ask, is there any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled before we proceed? Okay, not hearing anybody. I believe my recording is going, so we can have this for the archives for the future. As you remember, last month when I was here, which was on May the 19th on the TNT Network, we discussed outreaching the ham community into the greater community. And what we discussed was the various ways that ham radio operators can get involved in their community, either through like CERTs, community emergency response teams. We also talked about, I'm flipping through the pages here, we talked about Saturn, which is the Salvation Army Team Emergency Radio Network, which is another way we can serve. And we also talked about working with the Red Cross, and we talked about the ARES, which is Amateur Radio Emergency Services. There are so many ways that ham radio operators can get involved, including Emergency Communication Service, which is mainly storm spotters, which whether you be on the East Coast with hurricanes or out here in the Midwest with tornadoes, they need us badly. So there's so many things that ham radio operators can get involved in. That was our discussion May 19th. And what happened? Well, the weatherman must have looked over his shoulder and he saw that we were getting bored because he bombarded us. We've had tornadoes in the southern states and way up there in Springfield and Westfield, Massachusetts and in Joplin, Missouri. We've had wildfires in Arizona and New Mexico. And we've had floods coming down through the Missouri, down to Mississippi from North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Missouri, and into Kansas. So we have been struck across this country with many opportunities for ham radio operators to get involved or just listen, which either be the case. If anybody has any observations they want to make now about any weather event that they have gone through, please make your comments now. This is KD0CDQ. Okay, this evening, the main thing I was going to try to do was give us kind of a rundown of what I ran into. I responded to the Joplin, Missouri tornado, which took place on the 22nd of May. That was on a Sunday evening at 5:41 p.m., right after they had their high school graduation and many families and youth were on their way home. In came this storm. A little later, I will give you some observations from the deputy fire chief down there who I interviewed, and I will give you an idea of what I ran into working with the Salvation Army down there. That was who invited me. In other words, whenever we go to a disaster, it is not advisable to just show up. And so here I am, ready to serve, you know, with your ham radio, HT in one hand, and your mobile rig ready to go. What you have to do is wait for an invitation. That's the best way to do it. I think anybody would agree. Especially, you know, Bill up there in Canada would probably agree with Aries. We don't just motivate ourselves or activate ourselves. We wait until we're directed from authorities to come in. And that's the same thing that happened with me. On Monday, right after the tornado hit, I started seeing emails coming across to me that there was activity trying to organize a response to this horrible event that happened in Joplin, which is about 2.5 miles from Kansas City. Well, I finally, by 1:15, I had my invitation. We were invited to go down and respond with the Salvation Army team down there and provide some relief to the people in that area. So I just went to my supervisor. I was at school. I work in a high school, Blue Valley West. I went to my department head, told I was heading to Joplin. She said, "When are you coming back?" I said, "Next week." And out I went. She said, "I'll notify the teachers where you are so they won't, you know, everybody will know what happened to me." So I just went home, packed, and left. And I'll tell you, guys, you can think you're as prepared as Santa Claus on the night before Christmas. But when you want to gather the right clothing and gather all your gear and get some food and stuff in your car, you find out that it takes you a little bit of time. Well, I did depart at 3 o'clock. That was my target. I left school at about 1:30, and by 3 o'clock I was on the road. It took me, again, 2.5 hours to get there. I got there before dinner time, not knowing what to expect, never realizing that I was going to such a large disaster as Joplin, Missouri presented to everyone involved. This is KD0CDQ, letting it drop. This evening, I've invited other folks that have responded to the call to Joplin to come on board and tell me their stories as well, what they observed or what they felt or anything about the event. And I see that Henry, who is W0IE in Wichita, Kansas, is here. Henry, would you like to say anything about the events that you ran into or how your response came about? How did you get to go down there? This is KD0CDQ. Go ahead, Henry.
Okay, this is W0IE, Henry in Wichita, Kansas. I was notified also early Monday and was cleared to come down, but I couldn't make it down because I didn't have any old cars anymore. Both my cars were 2010, so I didn't make it down till Wednesday. But I was there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then came back Saturday around noon. But you can never pack too much. I have here in the house what's called the go bag. I thought I had everything I needed till June Jeffers, who's the coordinator for CANMO division, sent me a list, and then I started putting stuff in there. Then I was so unsure what was going on down there or what status we would be at, I actually packed an HF, a long wire antenna, 200 feet of coax. I have one of these cars where the seats fold down in the floor or that storage normally. So I spent an entire afternoon getting packed. That would be Tuesday afternoon until I finally said, "I think I'm ready to go now." But I packed so much stuff that I even forgot I had some stuff. But I showed up with all the right equipment and just went right to work. I mean, virtually someone got off the canteen and I got on the canteen. Because I had been on the canteen at Greensburg. I was the first responder there. But I'll tell you that's my only two experiences deploying, but I'll quickly say, between the two, the Joplin experience was really something. I never enjoyed anything so much in my whole life as what I was doing out there. I really felt like I was helping people, but I just rode the canteen for those days. My wife, W0AJM, she also accompanied me down there. And she rode the canteens. And everything went pretty smooth. As with anything, there will always be one or two little perturbations, but they got smoothed over pretty quickly. And that's about it. We spent our 4 days and came back, but we came back motivated. Here in Wichita, Kansas, Sedgwick County, we're not really strong with getting together and meeting with the Saturn people. So I got with the Saturn coordinator for this area, and we're going to start having meetings and start getting things in order, because we learned a lot, but we got highly motivated. We really enjoyed it. W0IE.
This is 80CDQ. Yes, Henry, that motivation, that is the key, that when an event like this takes place, it kind of makes you realize why you went through training, why you even have a radio license, and why you have a need to help other people. And this is the vehicle to make it happen. This is the vehicle to motivate other people to come out and give it a try. Actually, when I got down there, Brian Short, who's KC0BS, he had already taken down a mobile unit we have. We have a little, it's like a little trailer, a little pop-up deal. It's maybe about 4 feet tall, but you can get three radio operators in there. We have it rigged for VHF, UHF, and HF operation, and he already had it there with an antenna towering over the Salvation Army building. And so on that Monday when I got there, there were four of us. Yet there were 11 assignments by Tuesday morning. I think Henry realized that. There were more assignments than there were people to handle it. So we just used technical signs, and whatever we were doing, it sounded like we had a gang of guys and women down there, I think, because I know I kept changing my technical sign, and it sounded like I was somebody else as I did various things. Now, for this evening, I put out three different invitations for people to come aboard and talk about their experience down there on the Saturn Net, which we have here in the Kansas City area on Tuesday evening at 7:30. I put out the call for any Saturn members who had gone to Joplin to invited to be on this program this evening. I also, through my Santa Fe Trail Amateur Radio Club Net, the club that I belong to here in Olathe, which is on the Kansas side of the Mighty Mo, I put out on the net to them, anyone of them that wanted to come on the air, to come on the air this evening. And I made a third attempt. I sent an email to every operator that I knew was down there. And I knew of 15. Henry, I didn't have your name on the list, but somehow through the Lord's work, you got the word that to be here this evening. So some other folks may pop in here. I'm looking at the list. I'm not sure. I don't see any names at the moment of other folks that were down there, but you never can tell on these repeaters. Is there anyone else who would like to make a comment? Remember, when you do make your comment, keep it less than keep it less than 4 minutes. I try to do 3.5. We don't want to drop any repeaters anywhere. Does anyone else has anyone else responded to Joplin during this event who would like to say something? Come aboard now. This is KD0CDQ.
KDJ.
Was that KJ4PUJ, Tony?
Sure was, Mike. KJ4PUJ, Tony here down in the Florida Keys. First of all, I want to thank you and others that you invited and that were able to make it this evening for sharing your experiences with us. And I would just kind of like, before you wrap up this evening, I wanted to get this question in early. If each of you that were able to respond to Joplin or somehow assist in any of the recent disasters, if you could just kind of pick three things individually that you would recommend in terms of amateur radio operations and emergency preparedness, and then getting involved with your local group, whether it be Aries or Saturn or Red Cross or whoever. So wanted to get that in early. And other than that, thank you, everybody, for showing up, and sit back and enjoy. You're doing a great job, Mike.
Thank you, Tony. I see one of my buddies is here, KD0KLD. Tony, KD0KLD, would you want to share with us what your observations were down in Joplin? And remember, we got to keep it under 4 minutes. We can come back again, but we have to do a break so we don't drop repeaters. Go ahead, Tony. This is in Gardner, Kansas.
Thank you, Mike. Good evening, everybody. I haven't been involved in ham radio all that long, so I guess I'm kind of, in a bad sense of the word, one of the lucky ones that didn't have to wait around to be a member and do all the training and drills for years before I was able to be deployed to a disaster. I had a couple more days of preparation, worry, and planning than it sounds like the other gentleman did. And of course, in any disaster, you never know. Information changes, the situation in the area changes. So the information I got was Basically, you're in with the gambit from your sleeping in a car to, you know, nice hotel rooms. You know, again, full food available, or, well, you better go down there and take care of yourself. So, yeah, I spent a couple of definitely a couple of days sweating over it and loading and unloading and changing and that kind of stuff. Probably the biggest thing for me was recognizing the difference between an organized and established Saturn group and a newly forming, not quite there yet group. And I don't mean to sound, you know, like I'm bad-mouthing anybody or anything like that. When I got down there, the first 5 of the 7 days I was down there, the majority of the folks that were there were from the same Saturn group that Mike's with, that I'm with, and we practice all the time. We do public service events. We do drills and training. So we were able, you could really tell the difference. I'm going to let it drop. This is KD0KLD back. And then when I found out the last couple of days I was there, a different Saturn division that's just now kind of in their infancy took over. It was a big change in just the atmosphere, in the way things were handled, and the organization and that kind of thing. Not necessarily bad, it was just I was able to see a big difference in the two different ages of the groups. And then to go back to, I think it was the other Tony's question real quick, I don't know of any three particular things. I do know a good mobile, at least for me in this particular incident, a good mobile radio capable of, you know, 25-plus watts, a good mag-mount antenna, and, you know, kind of what I have is I call it a radio in a box. So it's a standalone unit. You know, I've got a couple of 12-volt batteries in it. That way it's powered. You know, I loaned it to a guy that was on a canteen, and he had no trouble with it. I know that helped, and it seemed like the other thing that was lacking a lot of or in short supply was mag mount antennas. That's only two items, but that's really all that I come up with right off the top of my head. And I'll quit yapping and send it back to you, Mike, KD0KLD.
Tony, I really appreciated what you did. Tony was a runner for us down there. He had got a nice truck, and he was supplying the various canteens and a place called the Oasis, which was a great big circus tent where we fed a lot of people. And so he was running about delivering everything from ice to, I guess, Band-Aids, whatever in the world, whatever we needed, Tony would find us. Because down there, the Salvation Army had 6 canteen trucks. The canteen trucks came from various places in Kansas, Missouri, and as far away as Chicago. And they were there fully stocked, and they had the crews with them. Now, a ham radio operator's job, a Saturn member, see, Saturn is a division of the Salvation Army. Our job is radio communications, but that's not all we do. Our main task is to communicate, because when these canteens are out, we each had our territory, our district, that we would roam the streets like an ice cream truck. The driver would blow the horn at the houses we knew people were still occupying, and mainly children would come running out from everywhere, and workers would come out because they were really in a bad state. This storm, they may have said it was about a half a mile to a mile wide and 6 miles long, but the fringes of it were still desolate. It wasn't like it all of a sudden ended at those parameters. So people didn't have any place. You couldn't buy a hamburger. You couldn't buy a bowling ball anywhere in that town. Everything was gone in the area we were in. So when those canteen trucks came down the road, people came out for meals. They came out for hydration, for snacks, for fruit. Or just the thing that I'm going to tell Tony down there in the Florida Keys, the thing I came away with was the spiritual contact. People wanted to tell somebody their story of how they're survivors, okay? They're not victims. We call them survivors. And they all had a story to tell. And the stories, you never knew which way they were going to go, but the people needed to tell somebody. And when the story started to wane, where you realized it was going to kind of drone on, that's when I would say to people, why don't we pray? And nobody turns you down. Now, it might have been southern Missouri, which is the Bible Belt, but I don't care where you are in this country. When you let people express themselves, and you're from the heart, say to them, let's pray. They will join together with you. And you spend time praying, you give them a good hug, and what can you do? You look at the devastation of their home and their life, and it had just happened. So they were still in a state of shock. They're going through the different stages of loss. You know, they're going through these stages, and that was the beginning stage. It was complete confusion, and they needed reality. Whenever they would see either a Salvation Army or a Red Cross canteen truck, there was humanity. We represented everyone in the United States. We recommended everybody from their next-door neighbor to the guy at the North Pole. We were there to help, and they knew we were there to help. Nobody resisted us. Let me let it drop, and I'll come back. If anybody has a comment, come on aboard. This is KD0CDQ. One thing especially that I noticed was that when I first got there, I was assigned to go around with the Salvation Army majors that came in from other cities, the people that would be in charge. You know, the uniform Salvation Army people, the people who are actually, they're all pastors, and they all have a great love for mankind. I was assigned to shadow them. In other words, I rode in the van with the lead officers, and as we went through the streets, whenever we saw people, you know, digging at their homes, picking up whatever they could, we'd get out of the van. The officers would go up to them, talk to them, same thing, listen to their story, pray with them, hug them. Some of it was awfully touching. Now, Tony from Gardner, he was a runner. He was supplying us with everything we needed. I was on the canteen trucks and with the officers. Now, when I was with these officers, if you can picture this, as a pile, there used to be homes, pile of rubble, and people huddled together, and they're crying. You can see that they're biting their nails. And when you get out of the van, you notice there are search and rescue teams, you know, people in heavy gear, helmets, you know, heavy gloves, and they're picking up pieces of debris, one piece at a time, and stacking them away from the structure. At the same time that they're moving the debris away, there were two search dogs with their handlers going through the property. What they were looking for was survivors. And what these families, why they were all huddled together on the various homes, either they lived in that house or a relative of them had lived in that house, and they were waiting for the search teams to uncover whatever they would uncover, and the search dogs were just doing their thing. It was a very humbling scene. And you could see the need for a pastor dressed in a nice Salvation Army uniform, looking very crisp, hugging people, and standing there right with them. We'd spend a few moments here, and then we'd move on to the next. But watching this repetitively, it was so humbling to see that we actually put our feet on our prayers, shall we say. You know, Jesus says he's always there to guide us and help us, but he needs us to be his feet. He uses us. He uses us. And we were being used. We could feel we were being used. Whether you're a believer in God or not, either way, there was a spiritualness. And as we went about and saw the devastation, there was no end to it. It continued on and on. I'm going to let it drop, and I'm going to tell you about working the canteens. This is KD0CDQ. If anybody has any comments, please come aboard.
This is W0IE. I just have one quick comment I'd like to make based on someone else's comment earlier. But I was there the first week. The second week through Sunday, which would have been the fifth, I spent all my time up here in Wichita working with some of the inputs that ARRL had given us and trying to man up the week of the 6th through the 10th. And we managed to fill that at least with 10 operators, get them scheduled, and handed that to Midland. But I need to make this comment. I don't know how it went on that third week, but I do know I have asked each one of the people that I recruited to send me their name and address in case someone's going to send them a letter of appreciation or something. And they were mostly Aries operators, mostly Aries. But anyway, all the letters I got back, emails I got back from the Aries operators said They were so impressed with what they saw with the organization and how it was running down there in Joplin during that week of the 6th through the 10th. That's all I scheduled. And they were going to join Saturn. They were going to, wherever they were, as far away as, say, Jefferson City and like Tulsa and around there, they were going to join Saturn. They were really impressed with that. This is W0IE.
Thank you, Henry, for sharing that. This is KD0CDQ. Yes, people came from so many areas, and they had not worked in an organized setting like that before. And yet, as people came, they slowly figured how to work their way where they would be part of the team. One thing I always remembered, and I would tell the new people, we only get on the radio and transmit what the officers are asking us to do, the Salvation Army officers in this case. Only what the leaders tell us to do is only thing we broadcast. We add no color to it. We add no addition. If one of the Salvation Army captains asked for blue ice, I would ask for blue ice and 20 bags. Whatever they asked for is what I got on the air with. We're very, very organized. So much so, in fact, it was very good that the local hams allowed us to use their repeater, 147000. So we had a repeater to use, although it was on an angle. So one of the hams had to go up to 80-pound bags of sandbag and straighten up that antenna. The antenna was only on the second story of the building. And yet we got reports from the local police, from the U.S. Marshals. We got reports that when they heard us on the radio, it was so professional that it was hard for them to believe that we were amateur radio operators, because everyone was listening, the dispatchers, everyone was tuned in, because we were the ones in the field, and they were at times responding to some of the things that we would run into. There were times even when I'd be backing up a canteen truck and a police car would be right there, I'd get out of the car and direct in traffic with me. They're right there. They're keeping an eye on us. They're always there. Again, I will echo the same thing that that Tony in Gardner, Kansas said. The basic thing was mag mount antennas. I went down with 3 mag mounts, one on my car and 2 spare. And when I went on the canteen, I mounted the mag mount on the canteen truck, which thankfully is a steel roof. They weren't the fiberglass. And all I could use on the rig when you're out there is your HT. Therefore, you're lucky if you've got 5 watts, right? That's all we have in those little things. So when you're on the canteens and you're going up and down through the hilly community and also through the various debris with all kinds of metal and such mixed in, we would sometimes lose contact and then a little later we'd get back in there again. But we were always kept in contact, and the net controllers did a fine job of asking what our needs were. And at times they'd ask our location because like something had to be delivered to us, so we had to coordinate to be at a certain place. It was a very organized arrangement. Actually, I was on a stationary camp. I was there for 10 days. I was there for 5 days. I came home for 5 and went back 5. Went back on the 3rd of June. And what I noticed was that first week, no one had any food. The police were fed by us daily off the canteen trucks, you know, lunch and dinner. The National Guard, the United States Marshals, and there were even U.S. Marshals from the Paw-Caw Indian Nation in Oklahoma. They sent up marshals as well because there was martial law from 9 o'clock on. Now, if you had your Saturn or your Aries identification, either markings on your car or your badges, you were okay. A few fellows were caught out there late and had to show their identification, and they were okay. You know, the police didn't detain them or make any trouble with them. But you must have identification with you, and it must be identification from an organized group that they recognize, like Salvation Army or Aries. So that was important. The police worked tirelessly. If any of you have worked with CERT, your Community Emergency Response Teams, I mentioned...
Time out, Mike.
Minutes. Am I back on the air? Can you hear me? This is KD0CDQ.
Yes, Mike. KD0KLD. You're back on.
Thank you, Tony. I kind of lost my train of thought there, but what we had the same families. Now, people would come out of the rubble at mealtime. I mean, like mothers and children, you know. They had a lot of children down in southern Missouri. We saw families from 4 to 6 kids was not unusual to see. they would come, and at first they were kind of hesitant, like as if they, you know, weren't too sure about a canteen truck. They'd never seen one before. And so it was our job to go out there and comfort them. Hey, come on, have something to eat. Come on, you want some pizza, you want some whatever. And they would slowly feel comfortable. So family after family felt comfortable that first week, and then they would come back again. They'd come back again to get food because there was no place to get anything. Kids were living on whatever. We ran into one grandmother, an older lady, and she said she had 20 children in the basement of her home. And we marveled at that. They weren't her children. The neighbors had brought the children to her home because she had a basement. They brought them to her home, and she was watching after the children while the parents were digging out their belongings or whatever they had to do. And so when we learned she had so many kids with her, one of the fellows had a four-wheeler, you know, one of those nice Hondas. And each meal he would stack 20 meals and 20 Gatorades or whatever we had to drink on his four-wheeler, and he'd go off to that house and deliver. Anything we could do to make people feel comfortable. We felt a shortfall with the Hispanic families. We could speak with the children, but the adults, we couldn't speak to the adults, and we didn't have anybody in the group who spoke Spanish. It was so disappointing. That's what the radios were calling on our radios. Does anybody have a Spanish-speaking person available? There was nobody available. So through the children, we communicated because they were kind of hesitant to take the food. They didn't quite understand about the Salvation Army or the Red Cross. They weren't too sure about the food. They thought they had to pay later or something. That's all we could figure. They were afraid they were getting indebted or something. No, we gave them everything we could. And what was so important to see the needs that we were able to fill, basic needs, you know, a meal, you know, in a clamshell, you know what I did? You got tacos one meal, you got meatloaf another meal, whatever you have. And then all the soft drinks we gave out, and the Gatorade and the water, and just plain old snacks. And a thing that we found we were short on, mothers would come up to us, do you have any milk for our children? Milk. Milk was a hard commodity to come by. This is KD0CDQ, letting it drop. If anybody has a question, come on aboard.
WQRI.
W3MEW.
I believe it's Paul, WQ1I. Would you come aboard first, and then we'll get Bill?
Okay, thank you, Mike. WQ1I, Paul in Danbury, Connecticut. And I just wanted to say to you, Mike, Tony, and Henry, first off, God bless you people for the work that you did. And I think there hasn't been a lot of other people coming in with questions, and I can tell you it's not out of lack of interest. It's riveting listening to the descriptions of the scenes here. And Mike, even your description of the canteen as, you know, operating like an ice cream truck would, going through the neighborhoods, handing out food to people. It's you know, that your descriptions and complete with the pictures that we saw on the news, which I'm sure doesn't do the devastation justice. It's just it's an astonishing and awesome thing, and I wanted to thank all of you not only for your service to the community up there, but for taking the time tonight to join us here and to bring this presentation to us, because it's fascinating, and it's just a riveting story. And when you have a chance, if you could, I'd be very interested in knowing a little bit more about the radio aspect and what kind of things you guys did with your radios in terms of communication and helping out that way. Back to you, Mike, WQ1I.
Yes, Paul, I'll get into that. But first, let me bring Bill up here. VE3MEW, would you come aboard, please?
Yeah, this is VE3MEW, Bill, up here in Peterborough, Ontario. Yeah, Paul, Mike, thanks for letting us come in here and hear some of this material. It's excellent. Not sure, Mike, whether you have gotten or received the Aries e-letter from ARRL, dated for June the 15th, 2011. I tried to forward it to you, but I doubt very much if the links in it are going to come through. But anyway, if you're an ARRL member, then you can subscribe to it, or you should be able to find it on the on the ARRL site anyway, if you remember. But I was reading over some of it the last couple of days to prepare myself for what you were going to do tonight. And, for example, I'm looking at the first note here. It says, it's entitled, "What an Unbelievable Response," written by the Missouri SEC, Ken Bearmore, WZOKRB. So he sent an open letter to all volunteers involved in the Joplin, Missouri tornado disaster. He wants to thank everybody for all their efforts and so on. And he goes on to talk about the ham communication between Springfield and Joplin and the Freeman Hospital in Joplin and so on, the Springfield Red Cross, their involvement. And there was the assistant, the DEC for district was involved and so on and so forth. On down he goes anyway. There's the Aries Digest. It mentions more of it. Saturn thanks amateurs for response to a call for assistance, and so on and so forth. So I found the information. I haven't even had a chance to read all these links yet, Mike. There's a lot more stuff here that I haven't had a chance to go through yet, but just what I've touched on is so far. Down near the bottom here, if I can get down near the bottom, there was a thing from which I noticed. Where'd it go? I'm just trying to find it here. Aries. Oh, yeah, the FEMA administrator. And about talking about amateur radio as being, and he called it the last line of defense. So that's what the FEMA administrator, who was he here? I'm trying to see if I can come up with a name. Craig Fugate described the amateur radio operators as the ultimate backup. So there you go. Anyway, I don't know whether you've had a chance to get over that article or not, or look at it, or anything, but I sent you what I could. Mike, the only problem is I doubt very much if the links are going to come through, because this is a text-based email program, and I'm usually not going to send that information through for you, but you can probably get it yourself. Back to Net, V3MEW.
Thank you, Bill, up there in Peterborough, Canada. I am an ARRL member, and I did read some items, but I haven't been into that the past couple of days. A question was put forward by Paul as to what with the equipment. We just used our plain 2 meters. Now, in my car, I've got 50 watts, so there was no problem anywhere in Joplin for me to get out when I was in my automobile. But when I was, like I mentioned, running with the Salvation Army officers, I just had my FT-60R, which is a Yaesu, and I had a diamond antenna, which is an aftermarket antenna, the one of those that sticks in your armpit when you put it in your pocket, that's so long, the antenna, that's all I had. And it did work inside a closed van. Now, the van was closed because it was quite hot, and the officers are there in dress uniform, so the windows were closed. And it worked inside the closed van in many places, not everywhere, but in many places. Other than that, I used my handy, my HT, when I was at the stationary canteen, and it got through very clearly. Near the hospital, St. John's Hospital, the one that all the windows were blown out, the 400-bed hospital, that was moved 10 inches off its foundation. The building is condemned, by the way. A beautiful building. It's a typical hospital. You know, I don't know how many floors. You know, it's like counting cars in a funeral. You know, I kind of counted them, but I didn't. But there, the operator had to operate from his car, so he used his mobile rig. Rather than being in the canteen truck, he had his own rig, his own car, and he made contact from there. So when we couldn't do it on 2 meters with the HT, we could do it on 2 meter with your mobile rig, because you got more power, of course. The dead spots were like in the low areas, which is, it's rolling, as you can imagine, it's a rolling area. So that's all we had to use was 2 meters, and we did try an HF link every 3 hours at 9, noon, and 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock routine. We tried to do an HF rig through a 3.92, which is a Salvation Army HF net 3.92. But it was difficult, and from what I've heard, there's only been 2 contacts established. One was Tony in Gardner, and he didn't realize that he had made contact. I don't think he really understood that he had, but he did make contact with us down there on that second day, Tuesday or Wednesday, he made contact. So it was very good that he made that. But our HF wasn't much. I didn't mess with the HF. I was just busy with the canteen trucks and working the people. I'm going to break, and then I'm going to give you a description of what happened each morning and each evening at the Salvation Army Center. This is KD0CDQ. If anybody has a comment, please come aboard.
KJ4WKD.
Yes, KJ4WKD. Jim, go right ahead, please.
Thank you, Mike. This is Jim in North Carolina. And before we wrap it up, or you wrap it up, or go much further, I want to tell you, particularly, how proud that you, that South Cars, on behalf of the South Cars Board, the South Cars membership, particularly on the VOIP side, that we are of you, and as well, certainly as well, your four colleagues who have joined us tonight. Thank you. A big thank you from all of us at South Cars, and certainly really all over the country and all over the world, but especially from South Cars. Wanted to get that in, Mike, before we go further and before I didn't want to interrupt later. Thank you, sir, and thanks, Henry, Tony, and not sure who else, but thank you guys very much. KJ4WKD, back to you, Mike.
This is KD0CDQ. I want to give you a picture. Picture a small chapel that fits maybe seats about 50, maybe 70, 80 people, a Salvation Army chapel. I want you to picture every morning. Every morning we had a morning meeting. The first week it was at 7:30 in the morning the first week, and then I moved back to 8:30 the second time I was there. But we would first have a hot wash where we'd all discuss what did we notice, you know, what everybody wanted to share, what you want to share, and we would just share things that we came to our mind over the evening, kind of a deal. And then we would all form in a great big circle and join hands. You'd have men and women, around 50 or more Salvation Army volunteers and the officers. We'd join hands and we'd pray. We'd pray for guidance for that day. And we would close with singing Amazing Grace. Then we would go about our way, getting on the canteens, getting out there as runners, getting out operating radios, whatever our task was. And we ended the day the same way. We came back, but the meeting was around 6 o'clock in the evening. Same thing, we'd have a hot wash, what happened during the day, how can we improve, what can we do better tomorrow, routine. And then we formed that circle again. 50 or more people, men and women in the circle, joining hands and praying spontaneously around the circle. And we would sing Amazing Grace again. And that's how we began, and that's how we ended our day. Because we realized we were doing work beyond providing meals and hydration and snacks and a smile. We were providing more for the people of Joplin. And it was such a beautiful, spontaneous thing to be able to express yourself spiritually. And now this observation was made from various people. I didn't see this happening because I guess I was too close. You know, when you're up too close to something, you don't see something happening. But when we would stop and pray with people at their homes with the canteen truck, it was observed that people that were on their property doing cleanup would stop their work. The men would take off their ball caps and bow their heads. Roofers, the roofers' guns would go silent, and the roofers were mostly Hispanic gentlemen, would take off their caps and lower their head, and there would be total silence in that area while we prayed with a particular family. We finished praying, heads would go up, the hats would go back on, the roofing guns would start again, and life began again. It was repetitive, that scene. Many people had noticed that, but again, when you're up close, you don't see it. People respect that the Lord was present down there, comforting people. And that second week that I was there, which would be the second, third week kind of a combination, I noticed a little bit of anger beginning. People were going through the loss phases, and they were starting to get angry that, you know, FEMA wasn't doing this, HUD wasn't doing that, this wasn't going, the insurance adjuster was giving them a fit. All this stuff was coming up. And so by now, they're into that anger stage, and they got to get through that anger stage. You cannot, as Tony in Florida will say, when people are going through grief, they must go through all the stages. They must go through them, not necessarily in the right order, but they have to go through all the stages of grief to wash it out. I still have some post-traumatic stress when I think about what's going on down there. Just listening to you folks, like Tony and Henry and Jim, your comments, and same with you, Paul. When I hear your comments, I feel myself in a sweat. I'm just sitting here in the air-conditioned room. I guess it's air-conditioned, but it doesn't feel like that to me now. A closing thing, which I want to go over, was I had the opportunity. One of the Salvation Army officers was from Los Angeles, California. He was a PhD. He's a counselor, you know, licensed dude. And both of us went to the fire department to speak to the chief. And the chief, of course, handed us over to the deputy chief. The firefighters of Los Angeles, the union out there, had raised $5,000 for the four firemen who lost their homes. Four firemen lost their homes down there. And there was more money going to come, but the $5,000 was already in the bag, shall I say. So we were trying to make contact. What we did was sending that check to the International Association of Firefighters down there, to their chapter, to distribute among those four families that lost their homes. But they also lost two fire stations. And the deputy chief, he took us out in his car with broken windshield and scratches all over it. His car wasn't fixed yet, of course. The deputy chief, he worked from Sunday night when that storm hit until Thursday, nonstop, just sleeping in a cot whenever he was getting back up. He was the IC, incident commander. He said there were four incident commanders during the whole event, so I don't know the other three. But when we saw these fire stations, all they were was a piece of a shack and a concrete slab. All the brick had been already moved into a pile. There was nothing that you could tell it was a fire station except the yellow hoses kind of laying there, the ones that go on the exhaust pipes of the trucks. Because a little Red Cross lady, she wasn't little, she was kind of a stout lady, this Red Cross lady came up to me and said, you can't even tell this was a fire station, can you? And I said, do you see those yellow hoses? That tells me this was a fire station, because those hoses go on the exhaust pipes of the trucks that are gone. They lost five fire trucks down there, three in one station and two in the other. They had a hazmat trailer completely crushed, gone. Couldn't be used at all for this event, you know, any kind of assistance. But they had major loss down there. Even the fire department had major loss. And the deputy chief took us around. And he was from Rome, New York, by the way. And he shared with us, he'd been living there for 28 years, but 28 years, but he still was a New Yorker, kind of like I am, in a way. We can't get rid of it no matter how long we live in the Midwest. And he marveled. He marveled at the spirit of his firefighters. You know how they were living? They were now living in a travel trailer, and they had loaned trucks. The state of Missouri had loaned them one fire truck for each station, and they were living in a trailer. And that's what I meant. They couldn't really shower properly, and, you know, they were all cramped together. And that's how the firemen were living in those two fire stations. And it wasn't a good situation for big men to have to live together in a small trailer and have to respond to any emergencies from their station, which was non-existent. But their spirit was there. The people's spirit is strong. This is KD0CDQ. Does anybody have a comment as we get close to closing this? It's KD0CDQ. In closing, the KD0CDQ, the deputy chief mentioned was that the surrounding communities had storm spotters, you know, emergency communication service, storm spotters, radio operators. But Joplin themselves do not have an organized storm spotter group. They don't have emergency communication service in Joplin. They rely on the surrounding counties. Well, the surrounding counties had their spotters out on that Sunday night. But the storm came out of Parsons, Kansas, which is kind of southwest of Joplin. It came out of Parsons. The storm came between jurisdictions, as the deputy chief explained it. The storm came between two different jurisdictions, so there were no spotters watching the storm's progress, you know, the storm's progress coming to Joplin. But the storm dropped right on Joplin. It came down directly on the city. It wasn't something that spilled its way in. It just dropped. maybe because of the heat. You know how a community is a hot source, and you know the hot air rises, hits the cold air, and that's how you get these tornadic activity. I suggest that the heat of the city of Joplin and the hot air rising and the cold air above, and when that storm came in, it just dropped right on them. No warning, nothing at all. We heard so many stories. There's the story of a young man that was sucked out of his Humvee, too. Just graduated from high school. His family was in a van, and the sirens went off, and the father got on the cell phone to the son and said, park that thing, and let's just go somewhere where it's safe. And his son said, no, I'm going to drive this thing home. Well, they found the Humvee after it had rolled a few times, and the police investigation shows the kid went out through the moonroof. They didn't find the body till a couple of days. When they did, it was inside a lake. The boy had landed in a lake. He just graduated high school. His family is still in the hospital from their injuries. So many tragic stories like that that you run into. Teenagers, on the second day I was there, these teenagers were handing out pamphlets, and they had a picture of a lady on it. And they said, we're looking for our mother. Had any of you seen this woman? It was a 47-year-old lady. I'm not going to forget this lady's face on that poster. And what do we do as ham radio operators? We got on the radio, and I called all the canteen trucks. We're bringing you out a poster. We want you to post it on your truck. We're looking for this woman. But these young teenagers, three children, were looking for their mom. Among all the rubble, they appeared, gave us some of those posters, and they disappeared into the crowd again. And you wonder, what happens to these people? It's untold stories of valor, untold stories of grief, stories that they will never forget. I actually took the time to sit down with my laptop one evening, and I made up 2 pages of notes of things I had observed. And the Salvation Army, the major in charge of the chaplain, the one in charge of spiritual things, he asked me to send it to him. I haven't sent it yet. I don't know about sending it to him. I probably will. But I just put down 2 pages of observations of what people told me at various places, little snippets of life, of real human beings that were in stress. And as we all know, when we're in stress, we need to share with people. You don't want to keep it in. You keep it in, it'll eat a hole in you. You got to talk to some confidants. And the best thing we wore, we had our Salvation Army shirts on, you know, a Salvation Army disaster team. And that was enough for the people to feel comfortable to talk to us, because we were representing a higher power. That's all I can figure. Well, there's a lot more I could say about this, but I just want to say that I pray that when things happen in your community, that those of you who are ham radio...
Okay, this is KJ4PUJ. I'm going to pick it up for just a second. It looks like Mike timed out. While he's resetting, I want to go ahead and thank Henry and Tony, the other Tony, KLD, and everybody else for participating, and ask if there are any questions or comments at this time. Okay, hearing none, we'll see if Mike's back. KD0CDQ, are you back?
Yes, I'm here. I think I doubled with you, Tony, did I? I'm sorry, KD0CDQ?
No, you just timed out, my friend. You're fine. This is KJ4PUJ turning it back over to KD0CDQ. Go ahead, Mike. She's all yours. Take it home.
Okay, guys. We can be proud through the trick of nature that we've picked ham radio as a hobby, something we like to do, because it's something that's needed in the community. I know when I saw the markings on these homes, as I mentioned earlier, the big X on the house, and on the top of the X is a date, and to the left is the name of the team that checked the home, and on the bottom is what was found in that big X. That's CERT training, fellas and girls. Community emergency response teams learn how to back up the fire department. The fire department and search and rescue teams went house to house. 8,000 homes and apartments were lost. 500 businesses were lost. And every vehicle had a big X with the marking on it. Was anybody found in that vehicle? Yes, when I got there that Monday and Tuesday, the first week, you could smell gasoline on the air. All those turned over cars, you could smell them. They were everywhere. So when it rained with the lightning and thunder that was going on, we had heat and rain and thunder. You know, every day was like that. I was glad for the rain because hopefully I was thinking, well, that's washing the gasoline into the ground, getting rid of it, you know, in my mind's eye. So, but we have a talent, we have equipment. I know we've invested hundreds and into thousands of dollars into our equipment. It can be used in the community and make you feel good that there's a purpose. There's fun to it, and there's a purpose. Now, Field Day is coming up 25th, 26th of June. If any of you in your community know of any clubs or organization having a field day, go out there, look at the equipment, look at what they're trying to do. Look at the windmills and the battery power that they're using and sun, solar panels, all kind of weird things. Get out there and see what they're doing and meet some of those guys out there. Get involved in your community. This Saturday morning, I'm working with a run. I don't even know who these people are that are going to run. They're running for charity. I'll be out there as a radio operator, okay? Because I got to keep practicing. You got to keep your hand in there. Otherwise, you know, you mess up with your radio. In the afternoon, I'll be working at a museum that's just partly it's the Enzer Museum. It's an old house that used to be a radio. There's a radio transmitter there. There's two huge towers outside. We transmit from there. But you've got to stay active in your community. Find things you can do. Wouldn't it be great if there was some kind of a military installation, like a battleship or something around, or a destroyer or a cruiser that you could go work on with the team, with the club, and actually transmit from that unit? There's so much fun you can have with ham radio, but never forget, the heart of it is when all else fails, that's when ham radio comes in, whether it be floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, fires, whatever it happens to be. See if you can, through an organized group, be helpful and do for others. And you know something? It makes you really feel good that you can do for other people. That's all I have, and I think we've gone. It's 8 o'clock in a minute. I'm going to let it go. Does anybody have a comment? If you have any comments, we'll close it on a comment. This is KD0CDQ. This is KD0CDQ. I thank everybody for listening in. I thank you, Henry, W0IE down in Wichita. I thank you, Tony, KD0KLD in Gardner. And I thank you, Tony, at KJ4PUJ down there in the Keys. You're a professional emergency responder, and you know what's going through our hearts. And Jim, I thank you for your comments. KJ4WKD, I thank you so much being in the Carolinas there. And Bill up in Canada, VE3MEW, keep the work going up there for Aries. Keep it going. And also WQ1I, that's a pretty neat call sign. I've got to watch when I read that. WQ1I, Paul, thank you. Thank you for keeping track of all this evening. And I see other people. I see George is there in Florida and Roger. I don't know where you are, N6ZOP. And I see Pennsylvania, good back east, WA3NNA. Thank you for listening in on a repeater. And I don't know if you're there, KY6V. I don't know if you're there or not. And also Kevin, also in the Florida Keys, KJ4PR. Thank you for being there. And I see Bill, W4WPA in Northeast Florida. When I was in the military, I was stationed in Florida, spent a couple of years there. It's a nice state. I thank you all for being there this evening. And if you have any comments, well, it's just my call sign at ARRL.net, you know, the old ARRL, you know, thing. That's all it takes to get to me. And I thank you for being there this evening. I thank you for listening. I've been on kind of pins and needles today because I was trying to make this effective to make people realize the importance of ham radio and how we can serve. And I thank you for the opportunity. I thank you all for listening. This is Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec. I'm going to disconnect the recording now, and thank you for listening in.